Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Melcor REIT second quarter conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Darren Rayburn, Chief Executive Officer of Melcor REIT. Please go ahead, Mr. Rayburn.
Thank you, Valerie. Good morning to all our investors, esteemed financial analysts, and those on the call generally interested in the performance of the Melcor REIT on this sunny and bright Alberta morning. Thank you for taking the time and joining our conference call and webcast for the second quarter of 2014. I'm Darren Rayburn, Chief Executive Officer, and with me on the call is Jonathan Shea, Chief Financial Officer of the Melcor REIT, who will speak in a few moments. I trust you've had an opportunity to review the material related to this call, including the management's discussion and analysis and the financial statements. Just in case some of you haven't, these materials are available on the Investor Relations section of our website at melcorreit.ca and on sedar.com. Before we begin, I'd like to point out that certain statements made during the course of this call may be forward-looking. For a complete discussion of items that may cause actual results to differ, please refer to the Business Environment and Risk section of our annual MD&A. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Jonathan Shea to discuss the key financial results for the first half of the year and quarter ended June 30th, 2014. John?
Thanks, Darren, and good morning and welcome to everyone on the call this morning. We report our financial results in Canadian dollars and in accordance with international financial reporting standards. We supplement our financial reporting with non-standard measures including funds from operations or FFO, adjusted funds from operation or AFFO, and net operating income or NOI. We believe these measures are important in evaluating our performance, but caution listeners that they may not be comparable to similar measures presented by other companies. You will find the definitions of these non-standard measures in our MD&A, as well as reconciliations to the most comparable IFRS measure. I will now walk everyone through the highlights of our results for the quarter ended June 30, 2014. Rental revenue was $11.12 million in Q2, representing growth of 14% over the second quarter of 2013. Year-to-date rental revenue was $21.77 million, up 12% over the first half of 2013. Revenue growth was driven primarily by increased GLA, as we have acquired six properties since 2013, including three in this quarter. These acquisitions contributed $1.34 million to rental revenue during the first half of 2014. To acquire two of these properties, we completed a bought deal issuance of trust units in the quarter for gross proceeds of $22.85 million, including the over-allotment option. We also use these funds to pay down a revolving credit facility, which will allow us to capitalize on acquisition opportunities as they arise. Year-to-date operating expenses increased by 14%, resulting from incremental expenses from our newly acquired properties and higher utilities and property tax assessments across the portfolio compared to 2013. Operating expenses will fluctuate from quarter to quarter depending on factors such as weather and repairs and maintenance schedules. We remain on budget on our planned operating expenditures for 2014. Net rental income was 6.71% for growth of 13% over 2013. First half net rental income was 13.02 million for growth of 10% over the first half of 2013. Our same asset NOI remains steady through Q2 and year to date. Our G&A expenses were 0.66 million or 5.9% of revenue in the second quarter and 4.7% of revenue year to date. We expect our G&A expenses to be in the range of 4.5% to 5.5% of revenue going forward. This has been increased slightly due to a reallocation of certain costs that were previously recorded in operating expenses that are now recorded in G&A. We should see a corresponding improvement in our NOI with no impact on our net income overall. Adjusted funds from operations were $3.9 million in the quarter for growth of 8% over Q2 2013 and $7.68 million in the first half for growth of 10%, directly as a result of higher NOI. Our debt to gross book value ratio was 46% at June 30, 2014. This is down compared to last quarter as we paid down our line of credit with proceeds from the equity raise completed in the quarter. Our target range for this ratio continues to be between 50 and 55%. We made distributions of 5.625 cents per trust unit in April, May, and June. The fair value of our portfolio increased by 6.5% compared to December 31, 2013 through a combination of acquisitions and fair value adjustments. We recorded a fair value gain of $737,000 in the first half of 2014. Costs of borrowing remains low with a weighted average interest rate of 3.97% at quarter end. I will now turn the call back over to Darren to discuss progress against the strategy and to provide some operating highlights of the quarter. Darren?
Thanks, John. we continue to execute our strategy and deliver as promised. A key initiative for 2014 has been an aggressive leasing program, as we face 17.6% of our gross leasable area rolling over in 2014. I'm pleased to report that our focus on leasing available space and on early renewals of expiring space has paid off. With 77% of our gross leasable area expiring this year being successfully renewed at the end of June. We've also completed just over 74,000 square feet of new leasing to date. This strong focus on leasing activity has led to increased portfolio occupancy of 92% at quarter end. Unlike the prevailing winds in our Canadian REIT universe, the Melcor REIT has not pushed pause on acquisitions, and in Q2, we continue to successfully execute on our stated acquisition growth strategy. We completed our fourth third-party acquisition since IPO with the purchase of a suburban office building on 107th Avenue in the highly coveted West Edmonton office submarket. We also completed our first acquisition via the Melcor Developments proprietary pipeline with the purchase of two properties from Melcor Developments. These proprietary purchases represent both aspects of the Melcor opportunity pipeline, a newly constructed retail project that fits the REIT's criteria for vend-in, and an established and redeveloped property, both in markets where the REIT is already established and has roots. The REIT is very pleased with the way this transaction transpired. It was a transparent process that was beneficial to the REIT, and we look forward to continuing to take advantage of future opportunities through this unique pipeline that gives Melcor REIT a true competitive advantage. We've now grown our portfolio gross leasable area by 17% through six acquisitions since our initial public offering on May 1st, 2013, and grown by 9% in the first half of 2014 alone. At the same time, we've made progress towards our portfolio diversification goals with substantial growth in both the industrial and retail asset classes gross leasable area. All the properties we have acquired fit well within our strategic criteria. Located in markets we know well and have a presence in, their assets complementary to our existing portfolio, their quality construction, and are immediately accretive on a leverage neutral basis. With the equity raise that we completed in May in conjunction with the acquisition of the Melcor properties, we are well positioned to continue to take advantage of future acquisition opportunities, and we have the capacity within our team to do so. We also continue to make improvements to our overall portfolio through our property management and asset enhancement strategies. These improvements contribute to optimized operating efficiency, including our ability to increase rental income, increase occupancy, promote sustainability and energy reduction strategies, and enhance property attractiveness and desirability. As tenant retention is critical to our success, we continue to focus on our signature customer care program to deliver exceptional service to our customers through upgrades and redevelopment of existing assets, continuous client contact, hands-on building management, and responsiveness to our clients. Our efforts are paying off, with our tenant retention renewal reported at 78.3% in the quarter, up from successful retention of 75.5% at the end of fiscal year 2013. Another measure that we track as representation of our commitment to customer service is the percentage of calls that we respond to a reported client issue within 30 minutes. So far in 2014, our property and operation teams have responded to 96% of service calls within our target time frame. Our relationship with our tenants is paramount in everything we do and in every service we offer. And I want to make special mention of how proud we are of the efforts of our property management, our building operations, and our leasing teams. Their focus on and dedication to client satisfaction and responsiveness is paying off in our elevated tenant retention stats and in our increasing occupancy. In terms of outlook, we anticipate that commercial real estate fundamentals will remain healthy in Western Canada in the near to midterms, with stable to slightly increasing occupancy rates. There's no place else I'd rather be right here than right now in Western Canada when speaking of the real estate fundamentals. We see current stability in activity levels in all of our Western Canadian markets and anticipate continued growth on average in both rental renewals and rental rates as leases renew. Our focus continues to be on providing signature customer care, maximizing occupancy, and controlling expenses while paying attention to the bricks and mortar and real estate fundamentals. Today, there are many positive factors that will continue to shape our growth now and in the future. We have a well-established and diversified portfolio of income-producing assets in high-growth Western Canadian markets. Today, our portfolio is 70% larger than it was when we IPO'd 14 months ago. We are directly connected to a solid pipeline of high-quality assets being developed over the next 5 to 10 years. We will continue to actively seek out suitable acquisitions to grow our portfolio, both through third parties and via the Melcor Developments pipeline. We have an exceptional and experienced team managing and leasing our properties and overseeing strategic investments in our assets to maximize their potential. We take a disciplined approach, and we remain committed to executing our growth strategy, delivering solid results, and continuing to perform as promised. We'd now be happy to take your questions. Valerie, can you please open up the line?
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If at any time you wish to cancel your question, please press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while the participants register for questions. Thank you for your patience. Our first question is from Jenny Ma with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, guys.
Hey,
I wanted to ask a quick question for Jonathan about the reclassification of some of the costs related to recoveries from operating expenses to G&A.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like the difference in the other line under G&A was about $150,000 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Is that entirely attributable to the reclassification?
Most of it is. It's offset by an item that I can't recall off the top of my head, but the majority of it is the reclass.
Okay, and is that an indicative rate going forward of what the impact of OPEX and G&A will be?
Yeah, I think we expect kind of the year-end number to be between 4.5% and 5.5% of revenue. So previously we said it was between 3% to 4%.
Okay.
We moved that up a little bit, but at the end of the day, it's just a reallocation from operating expenses into G&A, and then there should be zero impact on the bottom line.
Right. So just to be clear, the G&A expense percentage would be 4.5% to 5.5% based on this
Correct.
Reclassification.
Correct.
Okay. And my second question is with regards to the Melcor development pipeline. It looks like with Kingsview being vended in, that was one of the pipeline that you guys, that MRD has. Could you speak a little bit to the timing of some of the projects, particularly some that may be closer to completion and potential vend-in?
Well, certainly we've had a good construction season and a good leasing season this year. Timing is always going to be limited to, or timing of it is always going to be kind of constricted by our ability to move buildings across by title, because how Melcor Development builds these assets is there may be a title, but there may be 3 or 4 buildings on that title. As we work through each of those buildings, as they become ready, is when they become, and when they reach kind of the 90% occupancy threshold and they're substantially complete from construction perspective, is when we can start considering them for the right of first refusal. Now, that being said, we've had a good construction season. I think a lot of our projects are moving down the construction kind of schedule. We're not in a position to say, you know, it's going to be sooner or it's going to be next month or the month after that. But certainly we're looking at a timeline that's sooner than later and probably within the next 6 months.
Within the next 6 months. So leased up to stabilization, completed and ready for vend-in to the REIT.
Yeah, and then all the other kind of regulatory matters and all that will apply. So, I mean, there's no timeline we're working towards at this point, but certainly we're focusing on the construction piece and we're focusing on the leasing piece on the development side.
Okay. And lastly, how's the acquisition pipeline looking as far as third party?
Well, Jenny, it's Darren. Thanks for the question. I would say my comment about the winds of the REIT world causing some REITs to push pause on acquisitions, we're not seeing as much competition for acquisitions. However, depending on the market that you're in, you know, the Edmonton market, there's still high expectations among sellers. So I'd say the pipeline is not as frothy as it once was. But having said that, as I mentioned, we still see opportunities in all the markets that we're in.
And you're still continuing to talk to some of the vendors who may not take properties to market?
Correct.
Okay. Great. Thanks, guys. I'll turn it back.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you. Our next question is from Dean Wilkinson with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Hey, Dean.
Just want to make sure that I'm 100% clear on that reclassification issue that Jenny brought up. Is that a perfectly linear offset so that your G&A, say, goes up by 1% and then your corresponding NOI margin at the property level goes up by 1% as well?
It wouldn't be linear like that, but the hard number would be. So the G&A will go up by 1%, which is roughly, I think when I looked at it, it was about $300,000 to $400,000. So please forgive me if I'm wrong. I'm just going off the top of my head. but it's $300,000 or $400,000 moved from the direct operating expenses down to G&A. So our direct operating expenses is going to be in the millions, right? So percentage-wise, it won't be the same percentage.
Right.
The nominal amount will. So, we'll
so we should just, for modeling purposes, add back that incremental difference to the NOI.
Correct.
And then that'll get it lined up. Okay. And then just to confirm, the borrowing base under your credit facility, is that the full $25
million? Our borrowing base is slightly lower than that right now.
Okay.
But it's kind of a number that ebbs and flows, but we do have $25 million available.
You have $25 million available.
Oh, sorry, the limit is $25 million. Our capacity is slightly lower than that, but that's based on our occupancy in the buildings at our margin, and that changes every month.
Okay. Would it be materially lower than that 25, or is it just a ballpark kind of?
It's a little bit lower. It's probably about half of that right now. We're in the process of moving a couple of properties in and out of that facility, but we have plenty of room right now. We're sitting on $4 million of cash as well, so we certainly have enough liquidity to meet day-to-day, and
yep.
We also have enough liquidity to make acquisitions if they arise.
And the restriction around that cash, is that largely related to property taxes and CapEx?
No, it's related to the allowances that were provided on IPO.
Okay.
So it is related to TIs and CapEx, but specifically to items that were related to the IPO.
Right, so they just come out over time.
That's right.
And then just finally, the same property NOI was flat over 2013, and does that account for the reclassification of those expenses down to the G&A line?
Some of it does. Some of it does. The reason it's flat is that occupancy across our portfolio has actually remained fairly consistent. So we are, with the performance perspective, they're actually performing quite similarly from last year.
From last year. Okay, so it wasn't removing any of those costs that caused it to be flat, like that was an offset, or was that... There was growth, and then you took those costs into consideration.
Yeah, Dean, it's Darren. There's about 3% of the
okay.
same property same property revenue growth.
Yep.
So that accounted for some of the upside.
All right, that gets me there. Perfect. That's all I had. I'll turn it back. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you. Our next question is from Michael Smith with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning.
I
just have a question. So I guess you have a fairly high retention rate. What kind of rental spreads are you achieving on renewal?
Well, Mike, I'm going to answer this question generally because as we're in multiple markets in three different provinces. So what we do disclose and what I'm happy to say is we're generally seeing increases. What I don't have for you today, Mike, is an actual percentage increase across the portfolio. It does vary between, for instance, the Regina market, the Kelowna market, and Edmonton and Calgary. But we do disclose that we expect to see increases on average on rollover.
Okay, so it's fair to say that your in-place rents are lower than market pretty much in all the regions you're in?
We would say across the board on average it would be 2 to 4%,
okay.
generally speaking.
Okay, and in your preamble you were talking about fairly good conditions in Western Canada in your markets. So do you anticipate further market rental growth, or is it more just maintaining high occupancy?
I think it's a little bit of both, Mike, but the one qualification I'll make is in Regina. You know, Regina has typically, over the last 10 years, had one of the lowest vacancy rates of downtown office in Canada. And with the opening of Harbour Tree and some other new construction, you know, the A-class office vacancy in Regina is looking to be 10 to 12% for this year. So while we don't see significant movement in the rates, we think that will cause at least a temporary decrease in any Class D office rates while there's a reclassification of tenants moving to new buildings. So with the exception of Regina, in our other markets, we do see opportunity for increases. I'd say for the near term in Regina, I'm not sure that we're going to see big increases on rollovers.
Okay, and then lastly, just on the 107th Avenue acquisition, what was the cap rate on that purchase?
The cap rate on that purchase, when you look at, we re-tenanted it. So we purchased the building from an owner user and signed a new lease before they moved in. Based on the new rental rates for the 10-year deal that was done, it's in the 8% range.
Great, thank you.
All right, thanks, Michael.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. Our next question is from Mike Markidis with Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks, and good morning. Not to beat a dead horse, but just to clarify again on the G&A issue, was the adjustment that you recorded in the second quarter, did that catch up for the entire first half of the year, or was it just a one-time? Did you restate it retrospectively?
It was a year-to-date adjustment.
Year-to-date adjustment, okay.
Yeah.
And just kind of looking over at your 2014 leases, obviously you had a heavy maturity profile and you guys have had very good retention, so a good job there. I don't think you guys have the lease rolls for the rest of the year in 2015 laid out in the quarter, but if I remember correctly, it moderates a little bit. Could you just recall, give us an idea of what's rolling next year and maybe give us some preliminary thoughts on what you're seeing so far on your 2015 leasing program?
Sure, Mike. For 2015, we're actually down to about 9% rollover. And if you look at 2015, we have one tenant at 16,000 square feet. We have one tenant at 23,000 square feet. The rest of the tenants are generally smaller tenants. So to answer your question, of our two larger tenants that are expiring, we are already in discussions with them in advance. And as far as the smaller tenancies, that will unfold as we go through.
But okay, and did you say 16 or 60?
1-6. Our largest expiry in 2015 is a 23,000 square foot tenant. The second largest is 16,000 square feet. And again, beyond that, there's two in the 10,000 range, and all the rest in 2015 are all below 10,000 feet, which gives us comfort in the consistency of our income and not have any large exposure to one specific tenant.
Okay. And then maybe just shifting gears to the acquisition program, when you look at your activity with third parties, most of it's basically been, kind of smaller tuck-in acquisitions. When you look at the pipeline today, is it kind of fairly consistent with that, or are there any sort of maybe larger portfolios that you're looking at?
Generally speaking, it seems consistent with the smaller to mid-sized buildings. There are a couple of portfolios, and of course, as you guys on the call all know, we are always looking and always seeking out. But if you had to put me on the spot, and you did, I would anticipate that the next acquisitions will be the smaller to mid-size and will not potentially be a larger portfolio in the midterm.
Okay. That's it for me. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from Jenny Ma with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just had a quick question. I want to go back to a vacancy you talked about in the past call, about 17,000 feet, that was expected to come back during Q2. Could you confirm that that did take place and maybe a little comment on the timing of that?
Jenny, are you speaking to the Regina vacancy that came back?
I believe so.
Because there was a Regina vacancy that came back, and our executive terrace building, the Mosaic Corporation, moved out into... Actually, John just made me a note. I'm sure you're talking about the Coast, our acquisition in Edmonton.
I have it at 17,000 feet,
okay.
Square feet in my notes. I apologize, I didn't write down the property.
Okay, so Jenny, you know what then? The Executive Terrace one is 15,000 feet. If it's 17,000 feet, you are speaking to a project we have in Edmonton that we purchased last year, the Coast Home Center.
Yep.
It's a 17,000 square foot vacancy. We have relet 12,000 square feet. The tenant is under construction as we speak. We'll be paying rent by September.
Okay.
We're actively marketing the remaining 5,000 square feet.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, so in that case, can you speak a little bit about the Mosaic vacancy you're talking about?
Sure, I can. Now that I brought it up, I'd be happy to speak to Jenny. So Mosaic Corporation moved out of Executive Terrace into the new Harbor 3, now called the Mosaic Building in downtown Regina. That was actually mid-2013.
Yeah.
We relet a portion of their space to the provincial government. And currently there's 9,800 square feet vacant at Executive Terrace, which is the remainder of Mosaic space. We're in active discussions on some expansions, but I do not have any conditional deals to report today.
Okay, and the lease to the government, when did that take place?
It actually took place, we did the deal upon expiry of Mosaic in July of 2013.
Oh, okay.
I believe they started paying rent in the first quarter of 2013.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting back over to you, Mr. Rayburn.
Thank you, Valerie. And thank you all on the call for taking your time and for your interest in the Melco REIT this morning. We look forward to speaking with you on future calls. As always, please feel free to contact me or John Chia directly with questions. And thank you for your support and your confidence in our Melco REIT. Good morning, everyone.
Thank you, gentlemen. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.